Hi, everyone. I'm Haley Allam, and this is Mom Life in Luxembourg. If you're a parent new to Luxembourg, then this is the podcast for you. From crèches to crèmes, we'll cover everything you need to know about raising kids and living your best life in the Grand Duchy. Moin, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today, I'm joined by the global dietitian, Diana Reed. Diana is a mom of three teenagers, originally from Seattle, Washington, and shocker, she came here as a trailing spouse. Today, we're going to talk all about how to build body positivity in our kids. And in today's day and age, with all the pressures they face, this conversation and this wisdom is duly needed across the board. I learned so much from recording this episode. I think she definitely has a lot of great tips, and I will be implementing them in my house immediately. I hope you enjoy the show, and as always, I'd love to hear from you. Filmless Merci. Hi, Diana. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So today, I would love to talk about body positivity. I think I can just say personally, I'm batting from behind in this category.
A lot of us are.
Yeah. I'm hoping you can drop some wisdom for myself, but also for the kids.
Definitely.
But before we do that, I would love to start with a little bit of your Luxembourgish story.
Sure. I have been here, let's see, 8.5 years now. So I moved in 2016. My husband was an Amazonian, so we're from Seattle. Twins were 7. And then my oldest was 10. And so now my oldest just graduated high school. So I'm feeling like those 8 years went by in a blink. When we first got here, like I think a lot of people, it was pretty confusing to sort of figure out what was what. My kids went to the British school, the St. George's. There's a lot I didn't know. I felt like there was always some kind of paperwork that I was behind on that nobody ever told me about. So that was sort of the theme for my first couple of years here.
Governmental paperwork?
Oh, school, governmental. You know, there was always something that said, you know, you should have had this, you should have had this piece of paperwork in. In general, out of the three kids, there was always somebody that was doing pretty well adapting to a new culture and a new environment, and then somebody that wasn't, and that seemed to change. And that still, even at these ages, is kind of the situation. So I have a lot of empathy for parents who are trying to sort of navigate the waters here and figure out where they belong, how their kids fit in, what all just kind of makes sense.
Since you are wrapping up high school chapters, do you have any advice for those of us who have multiple kids who are adjusting at various levels of success?
Oh, God, no.
Okay. Okay, great.
I mean, breathe. Breathe deeply.
Okay.
That's all I have to say. Expect the unexpected. Just know that it's going to be challenging, and it's going to be challenging in ways you didn't expect. It's also going to be really cool in ways that you hadn't expected. You know, thinking about what they're going to be when they grow up. I mean, I'm in my 50s and I'm still not entirely sure. So,
I mean, that's a great segue. Speaking of what you want to be when you grow up, I assume when you moved here, you were a trailing spouse and not really allowed to work here.
Correct. It took me about 3 years to be able to work. And so that was a struggle for me.
Identity-wise?
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. Nutrition is actually my second career. So it was kind of my second little identity crisis. After I had my kids, I took some time off and then decided to go back to graduate school to get my master's degree in public health and nutrition. So there was a time where I'd worked in a corporate job. Then I took a break and had small kids, and that was really not my thing as a stay-at-home mom, for me particularly. So then I went back to graduate school, and then I kind of went back and was a stay-at-home mom again. And so it was, but in a foreign country where I didn't know anybody and I didn't speak the language, and with a husband who traveled all the time. So it's been, I don't know, a cycle, but kind of a weird figure eight of kind of going from one thing back to another, back to another.
I'm giving you a big smile because I so relate with
been
so
there,
many.
Done that.
That's what the show is all about.
Yeah, that is exactly. I used to joke that I think Luxembourg has some of the most overqualified and underutilized women in anywhere in the world.
Okay, let's move on to the global dietitian, which is who you are.
Yes.
And now you're going to drop some wisdom. about body positivity and how we can build that up in our kids.
I think before we can talk about body positivity, we almost have to kind of back way up and think about what do we want as parents for our kids? When we think about just in general, we want healthy kids. When it comes to things like nutrition and health, we have to remember that health isn't just physical. It isn't just appearance-based.
100%.
That we really have to keep in mind mental, social, emotional health, as well as physical health. And if we think about, I want to raise a fully healthy, well-developed child, we have to start thinking about any of the ways that we talk to kids about food or nutrition or exercise has to really include that awareness that our child's mental health is a part of that too, that we can't sort of put the hammer down too hard on you have to eat this way or you have to eat this thing or you have to exercise X number of hours or play this sport. We really have to step backwards and think about the fact that our kids are not just little individual versions of us, that they actually are their own people. They have their own tastes. They have their own preferences. They have their own stage of development. Well, we're the adult. We're the parent. We do not live in our child's body. They are not us. And so we have to remember that they're different. They're going to have different tastes, sensitivities, preferences, needs. And then what they need is going to change over time. And so we want to be aware of that and roll with that. Our job isn't really to force ideas or a specific way of eating on them, but we want to kind of guide them with our experience and our knowledge and meld what we know about being healthy or eating healthy with their unique kind of needs and preferences. And that it's kind of hard.
Just thinking about my own kids, I have one son who says, carrots are the only vegetable that I will consider. Mm-hmm. No salad, no broccoli, no nothing. Yep. And I don't know how to be mindful of that without straight up telling them, you need to eat these vegetables.
I would still go even backwards for just a second. When we think about feeding kids, we want to think less immediately. It's not that it's unimportant about the what to eat. And we want to think more about how to eat. So we want to kind of talk to our kids about being in touch with their bodies. What do they like? What don't they like? What makes them feel good? How do they know if they're hungry? How do they know if they're full? How do they know, honestly, if they're sad or tired? And maybe that makes them want food. We really want them to have a sense of how they feel, rather than focusing immediately on a carrot is good and a candy bar is bad. There's this model called the division of responsibility that Alan Satter, who is a dietitian and a social worker, came up with. And the idea around that is we want to raise kids that are competent eaters. And so that's not about a kid that only eats salad or will only eat carrots, as an example, but it's more about a kid who understands what their body needs and doesn't eat too much, doesn't eat too little, is understanding sometimes I'm more hungry than others, sometimes I like this, sometimes I like that. Maybe I only like carrots right now, but who knows, if somebody keeps giving me a bunch of different types of vegetables, eventually I might pick something else up and try it. So the idea of this division of responsibility is that we're trying to raise competent eaters. Notice I didn't say anything about kids that eat a lot of vegetables or kids that...
I don't even really understand what a competent eater is. Yeah. Chewing and swallowing?
No. So a competent eater could also be another way of looking at what we call intuitive eating. And so intuitive eating is this concept, again, of listening to our body and knowing that our body can share with us. Am I hungry? It has signals for that. Am I full? It has signals for that. Do I feel really good if I only eat vegetables, or do I feel a little bit more satisfied if maybe I have some meat or some rice or some beans too? So competent eating is I know what my body needs rather than somebody telling me, you can't be hungry. Oh, you can't eat that much. That's not okay. Or you just ate, or that's too much food, right? So a competent eater is somebody that knows when to start and when to stop eating, that knows what types of foods feel the best in their body versus somebody else saying, this is a good food, this is a bad food, you can't have this, you can't have this, or you have to eat this to get that. So those are all what we would call food rules, right? And we were raised, as we were talking about this, with lots and lots of food rules, that you have to clean your plate, or you can only eat a certain number of calories, or there is a time for this sort of food, or this is a bad food. And so what we're trying to get away from is all of that noise and allowing ourselves to eat in a way that is pleasurable, that feels good, that doesn't either make us leave the table hungry and unsatisfied, or the converse, leaving us feel full and kind of gross. So when we think about eating intuitively, we want to eat according to our needs. Sometimes that's going to be emotional.
So yes. Is this something you need to kind of like devote a Sunday morning to when we're not eating, to identify these cues and talk about these things?
I think it's a daily, kind of just a daily conversation. Sort of like, I mean, we don't potty train a kid in a minute, right? We don't teach a kid to ride a bike in a minute. All of this stuff is kind of ongoing. So the way that this sort of division of responsibility model looks at is parents have a role and kids have a role. So the parent's role is to decide what food is bought, purchased, prepared, kind of put on the table. Ideally, there's a mix of nutritious, well-balanced foods and some fun foods, right? You know, food is not just about nutrition. It's about joy and pleasure and all that. So the parents decide what goes on the table. From there, the child's decision is what they eat and how much. And that's the part where we kind of freak out. We're like, oh, if I do that, my kid's only going to ever eat bread. And the reality is your kid might only eat bread for a while, but most likely not forever, right? And the reality is if we let our kid listen to their body, they're going to end up, and we just keep serving them different types of things, and we model that we're eating a variety of healthy food, and we're sort of stopping when we're comfortably full, the more that we kind of let our kids figure out what feels good in their body while we're asking them questions. Like, how does that feel when you eat a whole pizza, as an example? Or how does that feel if you only have a couple bites of something? Aren't you hungry later? Like, we might want to eat a little bit more because dinner isn't going to be for several more hours.
I really struggle with that.
Mm-hmm.
What if you have the kind of kid that says they're not hungry at dinner, but then wants a bowl of cereal right before bed?
Yeah. So that's actually one of the parts of the model too, is that we set up kind of a schedule. So it's not that it's fixed and, you know, you don't eat now, you never eat. But one of the things we can teach kids is a little bit of trial and error, right? So if you serve something at dinner and the child says, oh, I'm not going to eat that, then you don't just turn around and give them the bowl of cereal later. So in general, and again, this isn't going to work for every single kid, what we would do would we would be provide a number of different options on the table for the meal. Ideally, we do put something on the table the kid likes. Even if they do make an entire meal out of rice, like, they're getting something. The more that we just kind of keep presenting different types of foods and modeling, we eat a variety of foods, the more eventually they are going to try it. They're going to be curious.
Talking about putting stuff on the table, when I think about the week, I try, there's a chicken night, there's a meat night, there's a vegetarian night, you know, I try to kind of, but I'm also like, well, I know I'm going to have success with pizza, and I know that that night is quick, so it's going to be chicken nuggets.
Yep.
And when I think about presenting the different kinds of food, like if I make a bunch of broccoli and nobody eats it, that's a huge waste.
It is tough. And so what I often say, I mean, let's go one question at a time, back to the kind of modeling. In the past, there was this big focus on family meals all the time, and you had to eat with your children, and everybody had to have a meal together. And I think that's a lovely idea. It's also not entirely practical. Eating when you can with your kids so that they can see what you put on your plate, the pace of your eating, the fact that you're communicating and chatting with other people while you're eating, that you're maybe not watching TV or you're not just wolfing down your food. Those are little things that can happen over time. So it's not that like every single meal has to be perfect. And I do agree that with little kids, sometimes it's just easier to be like, here's pizza night, here's nugget night. I think that's super human and normal. And I think building in opportunities for your kids to be exposed to other food is super important too. What the right ratio is anybody's guess, right? So sometimes what I'll tell families, if they've got kids that are just pretty ingrained in their, you know, frozen food or whatnot, is, you know, pick one night a week where you cook together, or pick, we're going to do international night, and every week or twice a month or whatever works for you, try some new cuisine, you know, and just say, okay, none of us really know what this is. Let's try it out, right? And have that spirit of discovery. The other thing I would say is, depending on the age of the kids, like if they're still at home, that's just, they're just going to be, they like comfort. They like consistency. They don't necessarily always want to go out of their routine. But as they get older, as they go to school, as they see eat in the canteen, as they go over to other people's houses, all of those things, they are going to see other types of food. So it's not that if your kid at age 5 only eats pizza and nuggets, that that's the only thing they're going to eat forever. I will tell you that there are some benefits of peer pressure on that front. When they see other kids eating other stuff, or other families, or they watch movies or shows where they see other types of food, all of that contributes to curiosity and encouragement to kind of try new things.
I would like to toot my own horn and say we did have a breakthrough with zucchini.
Awesome.
Last night.
Awesome.
I did smother it in cheese.
I honestly think that the vegetable that gets eaten is way more nutritious than the one that doesn't.
Ugh.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's really not just about the zucchini.
So we're trying to be building body positivity.
Yeah.
But really you're saying it goes before you can even talk about having body positivity, you have to be this kind of intuitive, responsible, what was the word you used?
Competent eater.
Competent
it's not
eater.
A very sexy phrase. No. An intuitive eater.
Okay. But what if you notice that your kid consistently is making the wrong choice? Or, for example, I have one who never drinks water. Mm-hmm. I mean, his pee is brown. Like, is that uncomfortable for you? You must be so dehydrated all the time. Like, if I'm thirsty, I'm irritable, you know?
Right.
I have another, actually, the same kid. It was like a lounge buffet. And I think I told you this before. He put like 6 gummy bears on his plate and then like an apple and a sausage. And he's like, look, balanced diet.
Love it. Love it.
What are you supposed to do?
I think, well, how old is he, first question?
6.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty age appropriate. So that's the other thing that we have to remember is kids develop all of their skills. I mean, you know, a baby isn't born to walk right away. They can't even chew, you know. So kids are going to develop their ideas of what is or is not a healthy meal over time. And, you know, our job can be things like, well, we kind of need at least a couple things on our plate. That's a great way to start. We don't even have to start with, you have to have a fruit and a vegetable and a this and a that. But we might say, well, just eating one thing isn't great for our body. So let's at least try to have 2 things on our plate. And then maybe we would try 3. Right. And so coming at things like diversity and variety just from a different foods do different things for our bodies. We want to keep trying. We haven't tried all the foods in the world, so there might be other stuff out there that we like. We should keep exploring, right? I think the biggest thing we can do when kids are really little is get them kind of excited about food. They're going to have what we call neophobia. There's going to be like, oh, that looks weird. I'm not putting that in my mouth,
mm-hmm.
right? That is super, super normal and to be expected. And we should never shame kids for that. Like, we could ask, what feels scary about that food? Or what don't you like about that? Or do you want to try a bite? What we shouldn't do, though, is you have to take a bite. You you have to eat this much, etc. Because, again, what we want our kid to do is trust in their body and their taste. So if somebody wants to take a bite, awesome. If they really feel like that food is scary or dangerous, we can say, okay, well, you can put that over there and maybe you want to try that another time. Going back to your broccoli question, waste sucks. I'm fully with you. And what I often say is just put it in the fridge, try it again, put it into a stir fry, like just, you know, or make smaller amounts if you're not sure that your kid is really up for that. But the research says, honestly, the more that we try and control what our kids eat, either you need to eat more or you need to eat less,
the more that we label foods and say, this is a good food or this is a bad food, you can't have this or this is limited, the more that we do that, the more dysregulated our child becomes and the more they doubt their own body. Like, I don't know, do I like that? Do I not like that? Well, my mom says that I have to eat this gross looking thing in order to get the ice cream. Like, so clearly I'm being punished, you know, to get the reward, I have to eat this thing. And so we start to equate all these things in our head to like external rules. And what happens then is kids don't trust their body. They don't know what they want. They often end up eating more food in many instances. They may sneak or hide food. They may go over to somebody else's house to eat the food that you say that they're not allowed to have at your house.
I did that as a kid.
My husband did too. The more that that happens, we put our kids at risk for health issues as well as disordered eating because now they're not listening to their body. They're listening to somebody else tell them what they should have and what they shouldn't have and what they need and don't need. So the idea of kind of raising competent eaters is, yes, we have the knowledge about nutrition as parents. Yes, we understand that you can't just live off of chicken nuggets forever and ever and ever. But we also have to combine that with our unique kid, their stomach size, their taste palate, etc., and encourage some balanced nutrition, but also know that there isn't one way to have balanced nutrition, right? For your kid that only wants carrots right now, okay, I bet you they get bored of them pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Or sometime in the next 6 months, and then they're going to want something else. It's also pretty normal, and I think maybe we talked about this last time, for kids to hyper-focus on something. You know, when I lived in America, my kids would get into something, I'd go to Costco or some other market and buy a gigantic box of whatever it was, and as soon as I brought it home, they didn't like it anymore. So I think that's the other thing, is just the most common thing we know about kids eating is it's going to be weird, and it's going to change. And we just kind of keep showing up and giving them examples of a variety of different foods. And what I would say in that too is we don't leave things like desserts and quote unquote fun foods or special foods or bad foods. We don't just put those separately. That they can kind of be part of our overall routine. And every parent can decide what that looks like. Some parents might have a cookie or a little dessert every day at lunch, as an example, or a little something every day at dinner. Or some families might say, we usually have, you know, a dessert or a treat on the weekend. The rest of the week, eh. But it's not like this hard and fast rule of, well, that's bad, so we're only going to have it when we go to grandma's. Mm-hmm. Or something of that sort. The more that we normalize all different types of food, the less likely our kids are to fixate on something. Because I'll tell you what, and I know you know this already, our kids know when we're trying to kind of lead them in a direction. Like, don't you want more of this? Aren't you full? Like, are you sure you want that last pizza? Right? Like, our kids know what we're trying to do. And again, that either leads them to doubt their body, which gets us way back into the body image issues, or it kind of triggers this rebellion in them. Oh, she doesn't want me to eat that. Well, I'm going to eat three times as much. Oh, I'm not supposed to have that. I'm going to go sneak that out of the cupboard while nobody's looking.
Ooh.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we want to figure out for us as a family, whatever our values are, how do we kind of handle both making sure that we're getting plenty of fruits and vegetables and all that stuff, but also knowing that food is pleasure. Food is delightful. And sometimes a cookie tastes way better than a carrot.
That's true. I know that to be true personally.
Yeah.
Okay. So I feel like you just dropped so much wisdom on me. I'm going to have to chew. And I actually thought of you last night because my son was just going for it on the baguette. Mm-hmm. And he had zucchini breakthrough. He had some chicken. Mm-hmm. I consistently put this Lebanese lentil dish out and yes. It's just nobody likes it except for me and my husband. But he was going for the baguette and it was the last piece. And I like looked at him and he's like, do you want it, mommy?
Awesome.
But I said no, because I could tell that he wanted it, even though I personally thought he was having way too many carbs, but I didn't say anything. Mm-hmm.
because I'm trying to not say anything and just put the food out.
Yeah. It's really hard if it's not how you've kind of been socialized, or it can feel very scary because we feel like, but what if he does eat nothing but bread? Right. We live in a world where appearance is everything. But I just want to remind you that appearance isn't health. And body image and body positivity really comes from focusing on respecting our bodies and on focusing on what our bodies can do versus what they look like. Think about diversity, you know. Even just living in Luxembourg, think about the different number of nationalities and ethnicities. Human beings as a whole are super, super diverse, right? Everybody has different skin color, eye color, hair color, body shape, body type. But somehow a lot of that other diversity seems to be expected and approved, but we're all supposed to be thin. And I think that's something that's really important for us to recognize and not pass it on to our kids if we can.
What if you have a kid that comes to you mm-hmm. and expresses they don't like a certain part of their body, they mm-hmm. don't like the way they look? I have a friend whose little girl is kind of going through that right now.
Yeah.
How do you support them?
Well, the first thing I would say is, wow, that sounds really hard and that sounds painful. Because it does feel really painful to have other people judge you and your body. I mean, that's kind of our whole society, especially as we've discussed before for women. You know, one of the first questions would be, how did that make you feel? And do you think that was a fair statement that, you know, if somebody else was commenting on their body, what are their goals? What do they want to be? Because I just think back to the Olympics, a gymnast body is going to be way different than the rugby player's body, right? Versus the swimmers. And so we want to kind of think about what does our body need to help us do versus what does it look like? It is really hard. Ages 11 to 15, bodies change so much and nobody asks for it, right? Puberty and adolescence happens and bodies change. And that's kind of a freaky time for kids because nobody's body changes at the same rate, right? Some kids go through puberty early, some kids go through it later. Some kids put on a lot of weight before they grow tall, which is super common. Some kids just sprout up. And so what's happening, the thing that we have to realize with kids at that age is they're just feeling unsettled for a lot of reasons. So I think we want to really acknowledge that and recognize that this focus on body or emphasis on appearance is something that maybe the kids feel like they can control because the rest of it feels just crazy out of control. And so reminding our kids that, like, hey, body diversity is great. It's awesome. It's expected. And our body is really just the container that carries us around. Like, our body isn't our skills. Our body isn't our personality. Our body isn't our intelligence. It's just the thing that gets us from point A to point B. I will tell you from experience that sometimes this works really well with kids and sometimes they'll be like, you don't know. You don't know what it's like. But I do think that just continuing to help your child question the expectations, the societal expectations, like, why does everybody need to be thin? I mean, ask them. Why does everybody have to look a certain way? Does being thin equal healthy? Spoiler alert, no. Uh-huh. That's not an equivalence. And I think that the more that we can help our kid, again, feel comfortable in their body, like, how do you feel your best? Do you feel really good when you only sleep 4 hours? Probably not. Do you feel really good when you skip 2 meals a day? Probably not. Do you feel really good if you eat nothing but pizza for 2 weeks? Also, probably not. So continuing to engage with what feels right to you, because when you feel like you know your body and you're a friend with your body, more likely you're not going to try and change it and damage it to meet other people's needs.
Got it. Okay. So to recap, step one, build a competent eater.
Yeah.
You're responsible for putting the variety of foods out there. Mm-hmm. There are no bad foods, etc. Step two, ask questions, try to get them to tune in. And step three, focus on what your body can do rather than how it looks.
Yep. One of the things that I often tell parents, I mean, besides kind of some of the normal things, like let's try not to comment on our bodies in front of our kids. We may not feel body positive, but that doesn't mean that we need to share that with our kids, right? They are pretty smart. They know. Let's not weigh ourselves in front of our kids. Let's not talk about dieting in front of our kids. Let's not say, oh, I can't eat because I need to lose whatever. Like, that's fine for that to be in our heads, but let's keep that to ourselves, because that stuff really does get passed on to our kids, even really young kids. And that constant diet talk and self-doubt really can lead to risk of disordered eating in the future. So I think, you know, if we're going to talk about bodies in any way, we should talk about like, oh, I feel really strong today, or oh, I just went for a run. I really like that. That made me feel really energetic afterwards. One of the other things I would say is it's called the 30-second rule. So if we're going to comment on bodies or appearance or whatever, because it is kind of part of our society, like only comment on something somebody could change in 30 seconds. So, oh, you got a little boogie in your nose. Somebody could change that. Oh, you got a little lipstick on your teeth. Or, oh, I love those shoes. Those are awesome. When we comment on bodies and we comment on other things that aren't necessarily changeable, that's where we really start to inflict harm and negatively affect body image.
All right. I love that. I think we'll leave it right there. If people want to find out more about intuitive eating or body positivity or anything that a nutritionist can help them with, how can they find you?
I am on social media, @theglobalrd. And then my website is theglobaldietitian.com.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.